Penguin Random House Audio presents Dusk, Night, Dawn on Revival and Courage. This is the author, Anne Lamott. This is dedicated to Bill and Am. The Epigraph, Hymn to Time, by Ursula K. Le Guin. Time says, let there be every moment, and instantly there is space and the radiance of each bright galaxy, and eyes beholding radiance, and the gnats flickering dance, and the sea's expanse, and death and chance. Time makes room for going and coming home, and in time's womb begins all ending. Time is being and being time. It is all one thing, the shining, the seeing, the dark abounding. Prologue. Ribbons. Here we are, older, scared, numb on some days, enraged on others, with even less trust than we had a year ago. The devastating pandemic and the federal government's confused and deadly response was simply the final straw to a few years of crushing developments. A UN report on climate catastrophe was published months before my wedding in 2019, the report of the extinction of 1 million species 3 weeks after. Major buzzkill. Our poor country has been torn asunder. I await the reign of frogs. And I've gotten so much less young. I got Medicare 3 days before I got hitched, which sounds like something an old person might do, which does not describe adorably ageless me. I mostly love being in the third of my life, as it is the easiest that life has ever been, except for, well, the bodily aspects, and the dither and fogginess, and I wouldn't go back a year. Well, maybe back 1 year, before the 2 UN reports, which have changed everything. At our wedding were all the people we love most in the world, gathered in a redwood grove to celebrate the miracle that Neil and I had found each other. Needles in haystacks, wrinkly, mulish needles, and fallen in love and toughed out some conflicts. We celebrated and overate, while outside the sacred circle, our nation and the world seemed to have reached the point of no return. So we danced. That was glorious, and I hate to be a downer, but now what? Where on earth do we start to get our world and joy and hope and our faith in life itself back? Where can we again find belief and redemption and confidence that our new grandchildren will have breathable air and dry land on which to thrive and raise their own families? Will our great-grandchildren need gas masks? And is anyone in charge here anymore? If so, we'd like to know how to rise up, how to help restore all that the locusts have stolen, the earth, the oceans, democracy. Even with our sore feet, hearing loss, stiff fingers, poor digestion, stunned minds, broken hearts, we are ill with shock and awe. I am frequently reminded of Garcia Marquez's masterpiece, Love in the Time of Cholera, and of Yeats' cry in 1919 that the center cannot hold. Yes, these are times of great illness and distress, yet the center may just hold. I can simply tell you where my own rising up began. It was at the San Diego airport, not that long ago. I had left my house fairly early that morning for the San Francisco airport, feeling distant from my nice new husband, although I'm not sure he was aware of this, which is doubly annoying. We had had a stressful talk a few nights before, and let's say it had not been beautifully resolved. He stubbornly resisted my thoughts on some adjustments he might make to his life. The gall. In my defense, I had had these same thoughts for the 2.5 years we had been together, but now we were married. We were stuck with each other. At such a time, a girl's thoughts naturally turn to annulment, but we are not Catholic and are thus deprived of this option. The morning sky was pearly, with a broad ribbon of white below, so you thought it was going to be cold, but it was warm. You knew the sun was in there somewhere, inside all that murk that was going on, and every so often it pecked a hole from inside the eggshell and appeared. All the way from the airport in San Diego to my hotel, and all the way to a huge white tent holding 1,000 women, I waited for my husband to text the exact right words, although I was not sure what those might be. "Darling, you are the world to me, and I'm chagrined that I have resisted your excellent suggestions on how I might best live. From now on, I will do whatever I can to accommodate your tiny control issues and alleviate your extreme anxiety and self-loathing." Nope. All the women under the tent were pleasant and intelligent people, some of whom had been paid to assist my befuddled self into the room, get me mic'd and onto the stage, and the rest of whom had paid to hear what I had to say. And almost to a person, they followed their greeting with, "How's married life?" This is absolutely all I have heard since I got married. What is the correct answer, especially when you have been living together for almost 2 years and are not, at the moment, convinced it was a necessary change, as the new husband is a know-it-all and does not obey your will and sneezes too loudly, like a howler monkey with allergies? "Great," I kept answering to make the questioners happy. "But what is it really like 1 month in? Is it supposed to be this ordinary, where you're still mostly madly in love, and you've never met someone so brilliant who is also kind 95% of the time, but who is as set in his annoying ways as you are in yours? We got married with the Trump blimp flying figuratively overhead. Plus there's always laundry, where your husband throws your delicate sweater in the wash in a brutish and male way, or you leave a pen in your pants pocket and Dalmatian the whole load, and the dog may have gotten sick and old while you weren't looking." Sitting on stage next to the very lovely woman who was going to interview me, I asked in a whisper what the first question was going to be, and she enthused, "How's married life?" I loved the faces of the women under the tent, the whole gamut in age, looks, fashion, and I wanted to tell them the exact thing. I am always hoping that at church or in spiritual meetings someone will say the exact right thing that will save me from my bad mind and worries that day. I asked myself what that might be. A pastor friend once told me of her grandfather, who had been a minister too. When she was young, a friend asked her what he did. She replied, "Every Sunday he stands in front of everyone and tells them that they are beautiful and God loves them exactly the way they are, and they really don't have to worry because they all have each other. But by Tuesday they forget this, so on Sunday he goes back to their church and tells them that they are beautiful and God loves them just the way they are, and they don't have to worry because they all have each other." This is what I told the women in the tent, the women in pearls, Doc Martens, Chanel, buzz cuts. Many of them had bright streaks and stripes of magenta, aqua, green in their hair, even the otherwise conventional and elderly. It was a garden. I told them my stories of mess and redemption, because stories can be our most reliable medicine. I told them that, yes, it was going to be really hard to turn the environment around, but that we can do hard, and in fact we have done hard before. World War II, vaccines, antibiotics, antiretrovirals. We are up to this. They asked what the new husband was like, and I described him. "He protects and excites and sees me. He takes care of me. He makes me laugh. He and I share the belief that beyond the visible world is a truer realm, one that calls to us both. And we also split the chores." They ask what will save us all, what will turn the barge around from the current ugliness toward a better destination. Good old decency and kindness. I could tell that the women felt scared and sad about America, but also their own lives. They worried that they...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?